This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by a great CIO, the CIO of Ohio State University Medical Center, the Wexner Center, Phyllis Teeter. Phyllis has been at this for a long time. I take it she's become a Buckeye fan, not a Wolverine fan, but we'll find out today. We're going to talk to her about what applications, what programs, what works, what doesn't work, what she's excited about, priorities, her career, and a little bit more. Phyllis, can you take a moment to introduce yourself?
Sure. Thank you, Scott, for having me on today. I'm the Chief Information Officer at the Ohio State University Wexner Medical Center, and I have been at OSU for 30 years. I actually started here with a brand new IT degree when we used to build our own system in COBOL and C++. So I've seen our organization change to being what it is today, which has been an exciting and a wonderful ride.
So the Ohio State University Medical Center and the whole system is a magnificent system. I know I see Dr. Paz, magnificent leadership, an entirely great system. Talk about the pride in watching the system become as great as it's become in the period of time that you've been there. I mean, that must be exciting to watch.
It's been wonderful. And you're right, I am a Buckeye, so my pride extends to being part of this great institution. I have degrees from here. My kids went here. My parents went here. My babies were all born here. This is a wonderful place to be, and I'm very, very attached to Ohio State.
Let me just ask you one question along that. It's become so hard to get into Ohio State today.
Yeah.
Do you ever tell people of your generation that, yes, my kids could get in today, but we couldn't? Or parents couldn't, because it's become so hard to get into, and it's such a great school.
Yeah, I mean, my kids all got in, but I got in, you know, because I could pay the bills, and you know, I had a pulse. So,
you know what it is. It's the way in the world. But it truly has become magnificently. It was always a great institution. It's just gotten better and better. Yeah. And talk about your pride in the medical center.
So it has been a joy to be part of an organization that has grown and advanced so many things in the field of academic medicine, and just to see the respect that our organization has for the community and the community has back for us. I do think that there is a great love of Ohio State in general, but also really a respect for the medical center and a knowing that this is the place where we can make a difference in their lives. So it's been fantastic.
And take a moment on, as CIO today, what do you view as your top priorities, and how do you keep track of so many different priorities in trying to keep the information technology evolving, growing, getting better and better? What are the big priorities today?
So really the big priorities are, the number one is managing that work and that volume of work. There aren't any bad ideas in healthcare IT anymore. There's just many, 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 way too many to do good ones. So how to pick the very best things to spend those scarce resources on. Because if you do that well and are able to do that, it gives staff great satisfaction. So you help your team. It really helps the organization to achieve its strategic goals. So thinking about how to manage that work and manage it well, so we are concentrating the resources on the top things that can make a difference. So we have a great PMO, project management office, or portfolio management office that helps us do that. And so that's one of the ways that I use, is to really get staff dedicated to just the overseeing and prioritization of the work to make sure that the resources with the technical skills are working on the most important things.
And do you look at rationalizing the number of systems and programs going at any one time? And how do you look at those issues in terms of both trying to add programs and applications, get rid of programs and applications? How do you assess those issues?
So I think at the heart, it's about are we replacing a function that's already somewhat automated or a similar function, or are we still, because there are still functions in the healthcare world that have not been automated. So are we bringing in a new system to really help to automate something that we do in a manual way somewhat today. We might be documenting it, you know, in a system, but we're sort of documenting it by hand instead of getting fed by, you know, maybe an IoT device, an Internet of Things device. So it's really about making sure we understand the current state of how those things are getting done. And then really driving through enterprise platforms. And of course, we do happen to be an Epic client. And so, but it would be true with any EMR. How do we drive standardization through that? Because that brings the standardization in the user interface. It is certainly more efficient not to be adding additional systems that we need to care for that have their own platform or their own cloud that really, you know, create a whole set of responsibilities in addition to just delivering the new functionality. And so thinking about that and really challenging the organization and our staff and IT to make sure that we, again, are choosing where we need to have a new system and we need to add, well, then what are we getting rid of and how do we replace to make sure that we're not continuing to escalate cost and complexity for the organization.
How does a CIO work with different service lines? I know you're at a huge institution, but did you ever end up interacting with sort of the head of cardiology or the head of orthopedics or the head of, you know, the ER? Or do you not in your role do that where they're asking, you know, can we add this best in class program or not? How do you end up working? How does a CIO interact with different parts of the institution?
So I work with all of those folks, and I'm very fortunate, having been here so long, that I know them all quite well, and to really help them understand our guiding principles and how do we think about this, not to understand the technical solutions, that's our job, but to understand the guiding principles related to, you know, user acceptance and workflow, related to cost efficiencies, and standards related to security, and all of those things to help them understand why those are important for our organization, and to work with them at all the time, not just when they are saying, I want to buy a new system, or I want to investigate a new system or something, to really build that partnership and to think about bringing things to them from the technology organization. We do road shows of various new Epic functionality. We do a yearly kind of show of everything that we accomplished and the new things that are coming from our various vendors, to really be bringing solutions and communicating well what some of the new solutions that we have access to before we get, you know, a request for something that we know then we have to understand why we would hope to use our existing systems versus buying a new one. So
you love what you do. You do a great job at it. What has surprised you over the last 10 years? There's so many different things that have happened. Obviously, in the time of your tenure, you've seen the EMR evolve. You've seen this predictive analytics stuff. You've seen telehealth. You saw COVID. Like, when you think back a little bit, what has surprised you over the last decade or two? What is sort of like, or just been an evolution you didn't expect?
I think the pervasiveness of technology, and both in our personal lives as well as here at the medical center, and how it's really morphed into our ability to, you know, make any change or do something new in an organization. We are so dependent now on the technology. I used to think it was all about me and technology, but now a lot of the things are. We have a whole portfolio dedicated to nothing but our construction and renovation work in IT. So
that's a brilliant point. Let me ask you a follow-up question on that, Phyllis, because I love that. It's fascinating. And you're one of the people that's had the tenure to be able to answer this question. At what point did it move from technology was a function? In the old days, it was a function. It was sort of a service where you had to keep the computers running, it was modems and computers and big servers and things like that, to where it moved from that to being sort of a chief in the organization and part of truly the C-suite in terms of managing the whole system not just being a function. At what point did that evolution happen, or is there not really a specific moment, but it's been an evolution?
I don't think there's a specific moment. I do think for healthcare, the change in the requirements for EMRs via meaningful use was when it finally kind of got over the top. Because now, you know, every hospital and every clinic is in the same boat. You can't rearrange who's seeing, you know, patients in what area without like touching the system anymore. You can't, it is just such a part of every step in the delivery of healthcare in order to keep that record. The same way it's like, you know, when did we really start having a paper chart? Well, you know, before I was born, certainly. And but now it just, you can no longer accomplish the mission of our business without having that right by your side. And it's the same, it falls along with the personal adoption of technology, right? It was about the same time when folks started really always carrying their cell phone. And so I think it's broad in the digitalization of our whole economy. And it really hit healthcare kind of all at once because we had been so paper-based.
And let me ask you another question. The EMRs, there's these great, great systems, the Epics, the Cerners, the Allscripts, the Meditechs, and others, and others. Obviously, Epic, Cerner, Allscripts, the biggest, Meditech, still very, very powerful in a lot of smaller mid-sized hospital systems. Every few years, somebody says, those are going to be replaced by some web-based system that's a different approach to it. But it strikes me as, just like they said colonoscopies would be replaced by virtual colonoscopies, but there's whole industries and so much embeddedness. Is that ever a reality? And I guess we could never say never, but as a CIO, do you see so attached to the Epics, the Cerners, the Meditechs, the Allscripts, that this is never, it'd be a very long time till that changes? Or is there a part of your mind that says, yeah, I could see where that could happen?
So I think that it's not so much the function of being in embedded with a vendor or a system. I think it has to come back to the actual, how do we accomplish the delivery of healthcare? And it requires so much information to take care of a patient, right? So you've got the sort of record-keeping nature of wanting to know everything that ever happened to that patient, and of course, at your institution or any other, to make sure that you're taking the best care of that patient that you possibly can. All of those pieces of their clinical history are so important to making a current decision. And so that kind of drives the whole, it's a library of information about every patient, right? So the size of it, because that's one of the things that's so unwieldy, is the size of an EMR and all the information in there. I'm not sure how we're going to get away from that. And then when I think the other way is creating that new information, creating all that documentation, creating, you know, the orders to deliver the therapies, all of those things, until those processes change to frankly be less cumbersome, I wonder whether any EMR can be less cumbersome for a process that's pretty labor intensive, you know, whether you're doing it in a paper chart or an electronic one.
You know, it's fascinating. As I hear you talk, it's fascinating. It reminds me, I saw a system a long time ago change how they handled their revenue cycle. You know, they thought they'd flip a switch, it would be cheaper and better and more efficient. And that system, this is a long time ago, literally went broke in that change because they ended up messing with a core function that ended up killing their cash flow, and it was a disaster. And it's very interesting to hear you talk because it seems like it's not that that you don't have a choice, but once you're so embedded with a system, there are so many pieces of information that if you had to do a change, and I'm sure people do it all the time, but they must have to run it as two systems for a period of time, for a long period of time, to make sure it runs and translates well. But there is a lot of stickiness once you're heavily invested with one of the huge enterprise programs.
There is, but I think you're also, we're all heavily invested in healthcare itself, and a new EMR is not going to change those base functions that we have to do no matter who we have, right? It, you know, when they talk about, you know, when will the EMR come that is 100% user-friendly for being a physician? I don't know if possible, given what we require physicians to do today.
Yeah, incrementally getting better and better, but then the further incremental improvements seem to be smaller and smaller. But yeah. A different question for you. The information technology, the data analytics, has been so important to improving how diseases are treated and so forth. How rapidly are the information systems helping to improve the treatment of cancers, heart disease, obviously COVID? What do you see from your vantage point in terms of the evolution and the impact of the information systems and the data analytics to better treating, you know, these, at least these three or four big diseases that affect so many people?
I think they are making a significant difference in our ability to advance, as well as to safely care for patients with such high-end therapies. If you think about some of the therapies that they use in certainly in treating cancer or oncology diagnoses, without the technology to build those to such precise, if you think about delivering, you know, radiation therapy or proton therapy for that matter, without the technology and the analytics to test those and understand how they would function from a research perspective, I don't think we would have the advancements that we see. I think also the correlation and the ability to answer a hypothesis question. So, you know, it seems like I've seen, you know, we'll just pick something, you know, 20 people with blue eyes, and they seem to, and they always seem to have a particular high blood pressure. Is there a link? I mean, that's a trivial example, but the ability to ask those hypotheses of the data is where I think, you know, it allows us to focus our scarce and brilliant research minds on those things that seem to have some correlation according to data, not just anecdotally. So I believe that data is advancing us tremendously.
Well, it seems to be hugely, particularly in places where there's precision medicine at work and more in the oncology space, somewhat in the COVID-19 space, of course. The heart disease space seems very challenging still, just based on genetics and behavior habits and other things like that to really impact how we'd like it to, but hopefully making progress there too. Phyllis, it's a great pleasure to visit with you today. We've got a chance to talk about a variety of different issues, and I appreciate you indulging me and taking you down different paths. Just so thoughtful and such a great tenure and a remarkable institution. Phyllis Teeter, CIO of OSU, Ohio State University. At some point, I assume, I've got a daughter at Michigan. At some point in the next decade or so, Michigan will beat Ohio State again. I don't know if it will happen or not, but it might happen. But we'll see. I wouldn't bet on it.
We'll see.
It is a great pleasure to visit with you. It really is just tremendous. And great leadership at your institution. Thank you being a big part of that. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Thank you.